Welcome to Deep Dive, The Power of One. I'm Andy Tarnoff, the host of the Deep Dive Podcast Network, and I'm joined by my longtime friend, Andrea Bose, the best therapist I've ever met.
And he's going to edit that out, I hope.
I'm not editing that out, because I believe it, or else we wouldn't be doing much of a podcast. We've talked about this, about doing this for a long time, and we've known each other for something like 25 years. But in our recent conversations, you told me that you have a theory, maybe not a theory.
An approach to relationship therapy.
An approach to relationship therapy. And I think it's worthy of discussing, because you told me also that your favorite type of therapy is relationship therapy.
Yes, because it can be, relationships can be so difficult and challenging and so hellacious, really. They can be really miserable. And people come in all the time, no matter what people are coming in for, whether it's depression or anxiety or some other kind of mental discomfort. Usually when you dig down into it, there's relationship at some point. And a relationship with other people, relationship with family, relationship with history, relationship with yourself. So there are different levels of it, but people come in and they feel often kind of tormented by other people's behavior or lack thereof. And they just feel kind of victimized by it sometimes. And so what I've evolved to come to over the course of time, sitting in the room with someone saying, I'm miserable with this relationship. And they have kids and they have property and they have debt and they have all kinds of reasons to stay together, and they're just miserable and they can't get their partner in to work on it, and they feel like they have to have the partner in. And so over the course of time, I've sat across so many people like that, and it is so painful for them. It's painful for me. And I evolved this idea of putting it back on the responsibility back on the person who's sitting across from me, to do something about it, and a kind of a system, a formula, if you will. And it, to me, it satisfies the answers of should I leave or should I go? And it puts people through a process where they actually have to take responsibility and learn some skills and be really thoughtful about how they approach this, so that ultimately they can face themselves in the mirror if they have kids and they, you know, they have other obligations that are in question here, that they can look themselves in the mirror and say, I did the best that I know how.
So before we do our deep dive into that, let's just back up a little bit. This is, you're calling this The Power of One. And originally you thought about turning this into a book.
Right.
Or a screenplay or something, and I still think you should, but what we talked about
was... screenplay, yes. Can I have Meryl Streep
play? Yeah, it could be. Do you want her to play you?
Okay.
I don't know. You might as well cast whoever you want. It's your screenplay. But we talked about how the concept of writing a book is wonderful, but it takes forever, and perhaps this medium of podcasting is a more immediate way to get in front of people, and some more approachable sort of way of doing it too, because I always feel like self-help books are challenging because I don't think they like speak to me. They're just kind of generic. And then I read them and I'm like, who's that guy? What does he know?
Yeah. I've heard you say something like that before, and I get it, because there are things that are formulaic in a generic sense.
Yeah.
And so even though this formula could be seen that way, there are applications to it that need broader context and sometimes need to look at things that happened before, the things that could happen after. So I think that's a valid point.
And plus this formula or this platform is more of a conversation than a lecture. And I think that's another thing about these self-help folks that kind of bugs me. There's no back and forth. So in this case, I'm kind of playing like, not the patient, but at least the person who is asking you questions about what you're telling me as opposed to just reading it. So I think it's kind of cool. I'm excited about it. Before we even get into The Power of One, let's kind of establish some of your credentials, because I've known you for a long time. And people watching this or listening to this don't know you
yet. Yeah.
You're a therapist in Milwaukee. You've lived in many other places other than Milwaukee, but you're a specific kind of therapist. Can you talk a little bit about?
So before I do that, I want to actually say that, yes, I've been here in Milwaukee for 30 years. And prior to that, I've done many things. And the thing about being a therapist that I love is that all of the things that you've done before really get siphoned into what the work that you're doing. So I have been, I've owned a business. I ran a restaurant. I know you were saying that you think a lot of people want to own restaurants. I want to tell you, never worked so hard in my life. I would think twice about it again. It's a lot of work. So I was a lay midwife for a while in Indiana. I was a spiritual director for a while. Trying to think of...
That's a crazy resume.
It is crazy.
But you've been a therapist now for more than 30 years?
Right. Yep. Yes. Here in Milwaukee. Yeah.
And a specific kind of therapist, too, because I think just looking around your office, there's a lot of Carl Jung's. And I think that's worth at least touching on, because for people who have not had therapy or have had a specific type of therapy, this is pretty much the opposite of like the Freudian lie on the couch sort of thing.
Well, the thing about Jung is that he's so broad and so deep that just about anything falls into the Jungian approach. He was cross-cultural. He looked into spirituality. He looked into the unconscious in a different way than Freud, and held really a lot of respect for what he called the collective unconscious, which was really a mind or a mentality that pervades all things and is actually that we have contact with through our subconscious minds and through dreams and through projective work. So it really holds so much more than just a Freudian approach. So Jung is kind of my umbrella, but I am trained as a trauma specialist. And I remember when trauma was first introduced as a modality, which is like 30 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
When I heard about it, I stopped and I thought, what isn't trauma? I mean, in human life, if you're human, you've had trauma. You've had trauma. It's a matter of the degree and the age and the repetition of it and how devastating it was. But we've all had trauma. And so trauma is like another lens that I look through, for sure.
Yeah. So as much as you're a student of Jung, that's not what you're limited to. You've also customized your therapy approach based on other things.
Yeah,
I think that's what I'm saying. This isn't going to like jungtherapy.com.
No.
/
And I do EMDR, which is like a modality for trauma, but also for performance enhancement. So it really does help people to access a deeper part of their mind so that they can process things and see things differently. So it's a very powerful modality.
Performance, like I should be doing this before we hit record?
We could.
Oh, never thought of it like that.
Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about this concept of the power of one and how you developed that, what it means. This is just episode one of many, so we're not going to necessarily answer all the questions. We're going to give a little teaser, a little flavor, and start talking about it.
So again, it really evolved sitting across the room from someone who's coming in and grieving that they can't get their partner to come in and feeling like nothing is going to happen if they don't get their partner in. And I love doing partner work if people are willing. Some people aren't. People are afraid of it with good reason. I think that there's some reason to be afraid of people who are going to, if you come in, they're going to tell you what to do and how to live your life. And there's been some of that. But so this evolved because of that. And so the formula is this, and it's simple, but it's not easy. So it's once you figure out what you want or need, which are skills in and of themselves, learning how to say it in the appropriate way, ask for what you want or need in the appropriate way, in the appropriate time, all of which are also skills. How your partner responds either brings you closer together or starts to move you incrementally farther apart. So you can be perfect, which
Yeah. That'd be nice.
Yeah. You can be perfect at it and still not get the results that you want, but the result will be that you'll have an idea of whether or not this relationship is workable.
Can you give me an example, or a tangible example of something that someone could ask for and then keep it within themselves to determine if they receive it?
Right. So the example that I come up with, that's just kind of generic. Well, you know, your partner is home with the kids all day and you come home from work and you're an introvert and you need some time for downtime. And you might ask for that time in the appropriate way, not, you know, like maybe not in the moment when it's all kind of, you come home and your partner wants you to
talk
about the day, but maybe to talk about it at a different time when it's not, the pressure isn't there. And even to determine, is it okay for me to ask for that? You know, am I doing my fair share with the rest of the household and that sort of thing? So, but to be able to ask for that, and have your partner maybe, hopefully, sit down and say, well, let's work this out. Let's see how we can do this. And negotiate, a kind of a venue for a negotiation.
It's using that example. If you deliver your request in the appropriate time and place,
yeah,
and that person honors it, that's a thumbs up in the column for should I stay.
So, but honors it. See, even that, so that needs to be qualified.
Okay.
Because if your partner is angry at you,
mm-hmm.
if your partner has an axe to grind because of something that, you know, you didn't take care of before, or if your partner doesn't know how to respond, this happens a lot. It's like people get stonewalled. They just don't know what to say. All of those things are okay, as long as they're facilitated through and there's some discussion about it. It's like,
okay, so what would be an example of something not being okay to go in the thumbs down?
It's like, what's wrong with you? You're always asking for time away, and you've been gone all day and blah, 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 blah. So there's that.
Okay, so you can say no, it's just how you say no.
Right.
When, you know, I was like my younger self, and maybe a lot of other people felt this way, or maybe I just invented this. I don't know. I used to think of relationships and should I stay or should I go being like two columns of pros and cons.
Right.
But I never really thought of it in terms of myself, right? That power
right.
of one. I thought,
right.
like, is this person smart or is this person kind?
Check,
is this
check, per-
check, check, check,
yeah,
check.
Yeah.
But what you're saying is kind of flipping that on its head, right?
Absolutely. I think it's the way a lot of people look at it. And because I have many people that have come in with those lists and, you know, and they try to weigh and balance those out. And honestly, there are so many things in those lists. Some of those things can change if you are taking the responsibility for the things that you need to change and have changed in the relationship. People don't see that change as being an option sometimes.
Tell me more about that.
Well, I just, like you said, you know, is this person smart enough? Is this person, you know, attractive? I mean, there are those lists, they can be pretty set in people's minds, but this puts it back on you, puts the responsibility back on you. If your relationship isn't working, then learn how the skills so that you can at least make your needs known. If your partner, and if you followed, you know, the basic formula and your partner is not responding in a respectful way, then you're going to be shutting down that emotional side of things incrementally. So this might be a good time for me to mention John Gottman, which John Gottman is a therapist and a psychologist in Washington State. He's kind of the man that, when you go into relationship books, for lay people or mm-hmm. for clinicians, he's the guy. And so he has this concept of the four horsemen of the apocalypse.
I thought you invented that.
No, I wish I did.
The four horsemen of the relationship apocalypse?
Yeah.
That's his?
Yeah. Oh, no, I've never owned it.
I just assumed you did. I love
no,
this. I love slash hate this, but at the same time, it's a pretty important thing, I think, for people to consider.
And I think it's interesting because he's Jewish. And this, the Four Horsemen, is from...
That's not a Jewish...
No, it's from the Book of Revelations in the Christian scripture.
You can get the gist of this.
I think it's spectacular. Yeah, it's a spectacular concept.
So give it to me.
So the four horsemen of the apocalypse are the things that you look for that are like harbingers of doom in a relationship. And they are criticism, blame, stonewalling, and contempt. And I tell you what, John Gottman says he can look at a couple talking, he can record them and look at the recording of them interacting and tell with something like 96% accuracy whether they're going to survive as a couple. And it's because of the four horsemen of the apocalypse. So like when you said, what's a negative thing? So it would be contempt is just a killer. So you come home and you say to your partner, I just need some downtime. It's been a rough day. And your partner says, you know, what's wrong with you? You're so sensitive. You're always this. You're always that. That's contempt.
Do you think that the four horsemen of the apocalypse, the relationship apocalypse, are things that can be reversed? Or once they happen, the die is set?
I think it can be reversed as long as it's not become a long-term thing. But once I see, especially the contempt part, my antenna are up. And it usually comes out as something like I just said, that the partner is saying you're too sensitive, or they're not willing to see the other person's viewpoint. And it kills it. It's like it just slams the door in the person's face.
So this brings up an interesting point. Again, these are going to be things that we're going to talk about over an extended period of time, but people will come to you for relationship couples therapy, and they're paying you to make this relationship continue.
Right.
But sometimes that's not the right answer. Sometimes the answer is this shouldn't work, right?
Yes.
How do you balance the fact that people are coming to you to heal their relationship and the real answer is shouldn't be in it?
Well, those are pretty extenuating circumstances. I think that, again, if people are really applying themselves to some form of what I'm saying, then you can kind of get a sense of whether or not emotionally this relationship is going to work. That's never my call. I never make that call unless I'm concerned that somebody's being physically or hurt in some way. But other than that, that's never my call.
So regardless of what you see as a therapist using the tools, you don't say like, hold on, you guys should get out of this, or hold on, you guys should work on it. It's almost Socratic in the way that
might say something like, I'm not sure that this is going to work. I might say something like that. So, which brings up a point that I don't think we've ever discussed. So I do individual work and then I do couple work. When I'm doing individual work, I am the advocate for that person. I am holding that person's history and everything that I understand about it, the choices and behaviors that they have based on what I understand about their history. And so I'm their advocate. When I have a couple come in, I become an advocate for the relationship. And it's a change. It's a change for people to have that. So it won't work if I'm not neutral.
So can you do both? Can you be someone's therapist, but also their couple's therapist, or is that a conflict of interest?
So I have done that, but only, I usually have other therapists that I call in. I have my little crew of therapists that I will refer to, because people, it's hard, it's a hard transition for people to make from the individual shifting into the advocate for their relationship. Sometimes people feel abandoned, so I have tried only if I've seen somebody just a couple of times and they say they want to do relationships.
But long-time clients, not necessarily.
Okay. Yeah.
All right. Well, let me ask you one more thing that I just want to get out of the way. And then I think that's probably a good place to pause this first episode. You're dealing with very serious topics. I mean, you're a person, you're an empath in real life.
Yeah.
It's my friends.
Yeah.
How do you, or have you always been successful in, when the session's over, moving on to the next one, or do you take this stuff home with you? Does this weigh heavily on you? People aren't coming to see you about happy things necessarily.
No. Well, it's been a development for me that when I first started, I think I mentioned to you once that I had this client who I was trying desperately to get her through to graduate high school. And it never occurred to me to ask, but nobody in her family had ever graduated high school. And I was like swimming against the current with the way the family culture was. So it was hard at the beginning to come home. I'd have to kind of wring myself out. And that was a while ago. Now I'm way better at, I'm much more seasoned about it, and I'm not allowing myself to carry it. I can still be present to it without carrying it. And that's actually a difference that I actually train people, my clients, because there are a lot of people out there that are empaths who are carrying other people's energy and they don't know how to deal with it. So it's actually part of what I train people with.
Okay, so we'll have an empath episode.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, because it's become pretty well known now. When I first started talking about it 10, 15 years ago, it wasn't so well known. But people are permeable. We are all permeable to other people's energy. It's just a matter of to what degree and how that it affects you.
I think that's a good place to hold it. By now, if you've watched this episode, you're realizing this is a little different than some of the other stuff in the Deep Dive Podcast Network, whether you're a fan of Deep Dive MH370 True Crime Story, or you're a fan of Deep Dive Wine Acoustics, which is its own thing, or the feed. The Power of One is going to be a different sort of podcast. But if you like it, please like and subscribe with all the buttons. Andrea, this is fun. I think we should keep doing this and see where it goes.
Yeah. I thought it was fun too. I'm really happy to be able to share some of these things because they're important.
They are important.
Yep.
See you next time.
So thank you.
Thank you.